know I'd like to do a lot of nodding on this anyway, so it doesn't matter.
It's a visual medium.
Listen, I like Jen's response. That was a perfect response. She's always ready for YouTube. She never knows when you're going to spring it on her.
I'm afraid of YouTube. I don't want to be part of that cruel world.
You just disable comments on everything.
I feel like YouTube is in the cafeteria. YouTube is the wild popular kids. And podcasts are the kids that get a library pass and go to the library during lunch.
Where no one can hurt them.
Yes.
Oh, man.
The library, where no one can hurt you.
There's a lot of masturbators in the library.
Yeah, it's true. But who do they hurt?
They are abusing themselves.
It's a victimless crime.
Oh, it's not.
Welcome to PCMC. Thank you to all the essential workers out there.
You know, it's funny because you always start like that, and then you mention at some point in the episode that you yourself are an essential worker.
That's what they call the long con.
You never do it right after, but you're like 45 minutes in, you'll be like, I am an essential worker.
Yeah. I should just start every episode, welcome to PCMC, I'm better than you.
Oh my god.
I'm essential, but I'm not essential.
Oh. You know what I
mean? I'm not doctor, nurse essential. How is your mindset? How is your madness?
Peaks and valleys, I've been saying. Like, I'll have, you know, good periods and bad periods. And I've been, like, commiserating with your brother a lot and just being like, how's today? Today's pretty good, you know. Yesterday wasn't so great, but there's, like, weird periods where I'm, like, oddly okay with it and I kind of feel like I got used to it. And then there are other periods where I'm, like, completely stir crazy and just, like, crushed by anxiety.
I totally understand that feeling.
But, I mean, I guess that's everybody now, right? Except for the people who are just, like, out doing whatever the hell they want, which seems to be increasing.
Fuck those people.
I have like mostly just resentment for them. Like why can you do whatever you want? I want to do whatever I want.
COVID-19 is the ultimate test for Americans because it requires one, for you to care about other people, and two, to understand science even a little bit.
You know, it makes me like laugh, but I know I'm not getting the last laugh because, you know, ultimately everything can be spun to like own the libs, but it's like these people who refer to like liberals or Democrats or whatever as snowflakes are the ones making the biggest fucking stink about like the tiniest things, like wearing a mask or, you know, staying inside your house for 2 weeks. Like, please, like, grow up.
They've convinced themselves that if you wear a mask, you might as well just let your wife fuck other people in front of you.
Let your wife peg you.
Yeah, it's just weakness.
It's weakness. Yeah, like, that mindset.
Such fragility.
It makes me crazy. Whatever. I don't know. You know what? Part of me is just like, good, go out there. You guys be the test dummies.
Yeah, have fun.
Good luck. Thin out your numbers a little bit.
I just want to go to the movies.
I just want to go to the moon. Be away from all this madness.
Oh, my God. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah, the movies. It's going to be a long time for the movies, I think.
Yeah.
Drive-thrus? I mean, drive-in. Not drive-through, but drive-in.
You drive-through, you get
drive-through a movie. That's like, I caught the first minute. It looked pretty good.
All right, let's get into some news.
All right.
Well, it's inevitable that we talk about this, so let's talk about it. Nicolas Cage is Joe Exotic.
All right. You go.
Okay. I would like to give the rest of my time to the gentleman from New York. I think that no narrative fictional take on the story could be more entertaining than the documentary series. The whole project seems pointless to me.
It's like any of these things, right? It's kind of, I was thinking about this in terms of like the Disaster Artist the other day, because it's like, it's never gonna be as insane as the real person who did it. And it only works because it's real people, because once you make it like a fictionalized version, it's too crazy, it's too wild, it's too larger than life, it's no longer believable. Like, it only works because these people exist in real life.
I don't know how. I actually think Nicolas Cage is a good actor, and he's sort of become a meme. I think he actually, I don't think his acting style resembles reality, but I don't think realism is always what an actor is trying to do. But I don't know how he could be crazier than somebody we've already spent a lot of time with.
Yeah, I know. It's one of those things where I don't know if it's going to work. I really don't know if it's going to work. Yeah. Everybody in that documentary series is so larger than life. Every single character, every single one, from the guy who was like, you know, people think I lost my legs because I work with tigers, but really I lost them in a zip lining accident. Like, any little one-off character is crazy in that show.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, you put it on film, it's like a carnival sideshow. I don't know how it's really going to work.
I feel like the Tiger King excitement is already crested.
Yeah, for sure.
So, no.
I know. I know. Everyone's trying to strike while the iron's hot and, like, everything's shut down. So, it'll be, like, what, next year the earliest? And,
yeah.
Like, who's going to care at that point?
We're done with it. Mm-hmm. Taika Waititi is going to direct a Star Wars movie.
No.
There's so many announced Star Wars projects, and then they don't ever give you updates or tell you if any of them are canceled or not. Some that are just out there, like, maybe are they ever going to happen? It looks like the Rian Johnson trilogy is never
going to happen. Oh, really?
There's been literally no movement on it. The Obi-Wan show is happening, but they've, like, stopped production because everything stopped production.
Right.
It's like if you're in any way creative in this industry, Star Wars is like, hey, want a little Star Wars? How about some Star Wars?
I would be so hesitant to get involved as a filmmaker, given their track record with directors.
Right. I think at this point, if I were a filmmaker, I'd be like, sure, what the fuck? Just try to, just let me do what I want. If you can.
If you even can.
If it's possible. Well, he directed some of The Mandalorian.
Right. Fantastic episodes of the Mandalorian. How many did he do? He did the last one, right?
I'm not sure. Because he was always there, because he also voices IG-11.
Right.
I was talking a few episodes ago, me and Anthony did a mini about dream projects, and I said he'd be great for a Charles Bukowski movie because he understands drama and comedy so well. I really think he's sort of amazing, and he's kind of a hunk.
I like him very much. I like him a lot. Have you seen Hunt for the Wilder People?
No, I have not.
It's really good. It's a really, really good one. It's like one of his I guess more overlooked projects, even though he had already done, I think, What We Do in the Shadows at that point. And it's Sam Neill and the little kid from Deadpool 2.
Okay.
And it's a really good one. And it's kind of, I don't know, I like that he does his smaller things too. And he's still involved with the What We Do in the Shadows series, which we'll get into later.
Did you see the What We Do in the Shadows movie?
Yeah.
He's good in that.
He's good in it. Yeah, he's, you know, it's a good movie. I like the series better.
I think, yeah, I do too. He's a very interesting, I don't know, he's just a very interesting guy. They haven't said at all yet what it will be, or what era it will be in, or whatever. I just hope I still do think that Star Wars is a fertile breeding ground for interesting, weird ideas. And if you just stay away and you don't say you've got to put in legacy characters, you've got to put in this ship, you've got to put in bullshit, that interesting things can happen. I think the worst episode of Mandalorian is the one where they go to Tatooine.
I agree. Yeah, why? It just felt like pointless fan service.
Exactly.
It didn't really further the narrative of that season at all.
Right. It's like, well, we've got to go to Tatooine. We've got to go to the bar. He's got to sit where Han Solo was sitting. Why?
Yeah. And then there's like an even scummier Han Solo character there.
Right, right. Which is what I'm afraid of with season two of Mandalorian.
Yeah.
Because it's like, here's Ahsoka, and here's some clones, and here's fucking maybe some of the other characters. It's like, all right.
Like Boba Fett has been teased or announced.
I don't care that they brought him back to life, because they always regretted killing him. Even in the old canon, they brought him back very quickly in comics and stuff. But I just don't want every episode to be a cameo from a character that you know already.
Yeah, I agree. I'm liking the new characters, the new directions, the developments that they're doing. So why do we need to bother with the old stuff?
Yeah. Okay, so Reese Witherspoon is going to do a new Legally Blonde movie.
I heard.
Written by Mindy Kaling.
Now, that's the only part that really intrigued me, because I like Mindy Kaling. So I was like, oh, interesting, because I didn't see the second Legally Blonde. I saw the first Legally Blonde, and even at the time, I wasn't crazy about it. Like, I thought it was fine. I thought it was like a middling comedy. I kind of never understood why it was as popular as it was.
It was hugely popular. Yeah. Like, when we were, like, in high school and college, I feel like it was like Mean Girls level huge.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was a 2, which I don't think 2 was that bad.
I didn't see it. I just know Bob Newhart was in it for some reason.
Yeah. I think there might be a straight-to-DVD 3. I don't think this new one is a 3. I'm not sure. What are your thoughts on Mindy Kaling?
I'm a fan of Mindy's. I haven't seen Late Night, but I just watched her new series on Netflix, and I absolutely loved it. I liked the Mindy Project. I didn't finish it because I thought it kind of got weaker as the seasons went on, and so I just didn't finish the last season. But I liked it pretty. I would say overall, I liked it. I don't know. I like her as a writer. I like her comedic voice, and I think she. I don't know. I think she'd bring an interesting direction to a Legally Blonde series, which is something I like was never really interested in, but because she's on board, I'm interested in it.
What could it be at this point? Like, she becomes a Supreme Court justice?
Maybe. Or like a senator or something? I don't know. I think she was in Washington in the second one.
Yeah. I forget her trajectory. My feelings are, I liked Late Night a lot. I like her as a performer. I actually saw her in like a two-hander play, like years and years and years, even before The Office.
Okay.
Where she played Ben Affleck. It was her and some other woman playing Ben Affleck and Matt Damon.
Okay.
And I was like, wow, she's really funny. I could never get into Mindy Project, and I tried. I watched the pilot more than once. Mm-hmm. I know that my brother really loved it. I just couldn't ever get into it. So I don't know, but it is interesting to reboot a franchise with a writer attached.
Yeah.
I think that's at least a better way to go about it.
I agree, because then it's like, okay, the story's there.
Right, and it's not just, hey, we're going to bring back people. There's at least an idea there.
Yeah, I saw in the announcement that Reese Witherspoon said, like, I mean, she can't, I guess, promise anything because it's all, like, early in development, but she's like, I'm still in touch with like Luke Wilson and Selma Blair, so I would love for them to come back.
Okay. I mean, what the fuck's Luke Wilson doing? Am I right?
I know. He's just being the hotter Wilson brother.
Whoa, this is not a hot takes episode, Janine.
I don't think that's a hot take. I don't know that that's a hot take. I think that's like established.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know about that at all. Wow. Wow. All right. Okay. I mean, I prefer Luke. I like his movies better, even though there are less of them. Interesting. Okay.
I feel like I struck a nerve here.
You know what? Let's call this off. I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. I get up and you see behind me on Zoom, there's just a giant poster of Owen Wilson.
You have like pajama pants on and it's all Owen Wilson's face that I couldn't see it this whole time.
Wow.
It's like, You Mean Dupree is my favorite movie.
Wow. Wow. Fuck, I never even saw that.
I saw it in theaters. This is every episode we do now, it's like, what fucking terrible movie did I see in a theater? The last time it was Doom. This time it's You, Me, and Dupree.
I know. I don't know if we've ever talked about this on the podcast, but are you a kind of person that will walk out of a movie?
I've only ever, I'm evaluating if this is true. No, I know, but did I walk out of another one? I've only ever walked out of one movie.
I've walked out of at least a dozen.
Good for you, as you should. Now, do you request a refund?
No.
Okay.
But I do sneak into another theater.
I feel like that's fair.
You owe me a movie.
You owe me a good viewing experience. And I don't think that's legally fair or legal, but you know what? I think it's fair. Personally, I think it's fair.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, maybe it's different because now they have AMC cards and stuff, so you don't pay for each ticket. But even back in the old days, I'd still walk out. Life is too short.
No, I agree.
I've been in situations where I was with a group and I tried to get a rebellion, try to get us all to walk out and couldn't get it going. And then I was just mad.
Oh, man. I think when I went to see movies all the time, I also didn't have as discerning of a palate. And so I would just sit through whatever and be like, yeah, it was fine. And then years later, be like, that movie sucks.
Yeah.
I've only ever walked out of I Heart Huckabees.
Okay.
Just so weird. I don't know that it's a controversial or divisive film. I just did not like it. Could not get through it.
The last movie I walked out of, we walked out of Doolittle with Robert Downey Jr.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry you walked into Doolittle.
I give it a fighting chance. I'll go into any movie and give it 15 to 20 minutes. And I've even given movies longer if, I can see it might go somewhere. I'm like, okay, you earned yourself 5 more minutes, but you're on thin ice, buddy.
You are on the thinnest of ice.
Like, when I saw, what was that terrible sci-fi movie from last year? Valerium.
Oh, okay.
The opening credits, I don't know if you've seen it. It's the best part of the movie.
No, I haven't.
It's like a montage of space expansion to David Bowie.
Mm.
And I was like, all right, you bought yourself some time. And then
to the opening credits, you're already at the point where you're like, you have a clock running. You have a meter.
I sit there with my arms crossed like, go ahead, movie.
Dazzle me.
I tried to get my brother Anthony and a group of 9 people to walk out of the second Pirates of the Caribbean movie. Wouldn't happen. They wouldn't do it.
Your brother and I went to go see one of the Hunger Games movies, and I had to wake him up because he was snoring so loud. He's like, I'm sorry, it's hot in here.
What?
It made him fall asleep. I have so many funny movie theater stories with your brother. This time, was it you or him who had to take aspirin during Cloverfield because the theater got so hot, we got headaches?
That was him.
It was him. There's also the time we went to go see Hairspray and somebody grievously injured themselves in the aisle.
Yes. And then my car, my car got locked up in a parking lot.
Oh my God. That's right. You need to drive through the fence.
Yeah. Bananas.
Oh, man. This has been Remember Movies with Mike and Janine.
Hey, remember going outside, folks?
Oh, places? I remember places.
Oh, well, Zack Snyder.
He's releasing the Snyder Cut.
All right, here's the thing.
I scooped your story.
What, first of all, where do you begin? What do you think about this? What are your thoughts on this, the sad turn of events?
The initial sad turn of events, I have nothing but the deepest sympathy, and I think it's the most horrible thing in the world. And I don't imagine that he could have that much wrapped up when he had to leave the project so quickly, given the circumstances.
He didn't do a lot. He really didn't do that much in terms of shooting.
Right, so I'm confused as to what this even is.
Well, he's also saying, rumors are saying it could cost anywhere between 20 and 30 million. A movie that's already done, that means the cut does not and never did exist.
Hmm.
It means he's going to remake it, which this whole idea is, here's my problem with it. And it's not because I don't dislike his movies. I can see if a simpleton like you, who like Man of Steel, were interested interested in seeing his Justice League. But this feels like Rise of Skywalker levels studios listening to the loudest, most toxic people on the internet, like changing Sonic's design.
I do think that worked, though.
I do, too, but I just feel like, I don't know. I feel like we're telling people online that media is so interactive that if you just are loud and annoying enough, we'll do it for you. Mm. And I don't know if I like that.
Who ended up directing Justice League? Who took over?
Joss Whedon.
Oh, okay.
And I think he did an okay job. With a shitty script, he at least injected humor and life into it.
Mm.
What's the Zack Snyder cut? It's just going to be dark and gloomy?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I don't know what to expect from it. I guess at this point, studios are looking for anything to drum up interest because, you know, the movie industry is suffering currently because everything is stalled. So if they can get some excitement on some project.
But they have to reshoot stuff for this.
Yeah, that's weird.
And I don't see Affleck coming back.
I mean, have you seen him lately?
Yeah.
Smoking with his mask on. He's the most divorced person in the world.
He's like Milhouse's dad level of divorced.
He somehow gets more and more divorced every year.
I have a soft spot in my heart for Ben Affleck. I feel like the media is super hard on him, and I feel like he's a guy who suffers depression.
Well, he's just suffered from substance abuse. Like, he's, you know, he's a recovering alcoholic, and he, you know, he puts himself in treatment, and I have a lot of respect for that. Then he just goes out there, and people see his weird back tattoo, and he's got his mask down around his face, and he's smoking, and you're like, did you pick up your kids? Like, you know, he always looks like he just forgot about soccer practice.
But, you know, there's that one image of him standing outside with, like, a cigarette in his hand, and he's just sort of, like, he's got a look in his face, like, ah, fuck. And that is so my mood sometimes.
Ben Affleck is a big mood. He really yeah. is.
Yeah, I feel it.
Oh, man.
Zack Snyder's gonna be like, hey, do you want to play Batman again? And he's just gonna be a dial tone. Hey, do you want to play... And also they're saying, well, this is going to HBO's new service, HBO Max, so it's not getting a theatrical release.
I wanted to talk to you about that. Like, what is HBO Max if they have HBO Go already?
HBO Max is different. HBO Go is connected to HBO, the cable channel. HBO Max is like Netflix. It's its own thing with its own programming.
It's so weird.
Yeah.
But if you pay for HBO, then you won't get Max?
I don't know. Maybe Go will disappear. I have no idea.
I mean, that would make more sense.
Right. Than to just have two services.
Right, because currently you can just get Go without having cable, like without being a cable subscriber.
So it's probably just really a rebranding of Go.
This is like when they had all the HBO channels for no reason. It was like HBO, HBO 2, HBO Signature, which was like for right. women. I think there was one that was like edgy, like an edgy yeah, name.
It was like, all like cock rock action movies.
HBO Zone?
Yeah, sure.
I don't know. I'm thinking of ESPN Zone. My favorite channel. Is that a restaurant? I'm not sure.
Restaurant.
That's the one.
Hey, guys, remember restaurants? It might come out as a film, or it might be a six-part series.
The Snyder Cut?
Yeah.
That's strange. That's weird.
Are you interested in seeing it as a Man of Steel fan?
I'm not. I'm a Man of Steel fan. I'm not necessarily a Snyder fan. I think the work stands on its own.
Wow, okay. Let's go to Trailer Corner.
Okay.
Let's begin with Space Force.
Okay, I'm excited for Space Force.
Why?
All right, so let's give a rundown. It's a 10-episode series coming to Netflix on May 29th, which is Bill's birthday, if you want to get him something.
It's how old is Bill going to be?
How old is Bill going to be? The lady never tells. He's gonna be 35. It's a good one. we're halfway in between 30 and 40, so it's like you're in like a little cushy spot.
He's really got days left to refer to himself as early 30s.
That is true. And it's like, I'm in my early 30s. So it's Greg Daniels,
the American Office producer.
That's right. And the cast is just out of this world. And it's, that was not.
Boom, zoom, you make my heart go boom, boom.
Man, I was living for that episode.
So the cast is out of this world.
It really is. So Space Force, it's about developing the newest branch of the U.S. military, which kind of, I mean, I think kind of threw people for a loop when Trump announced we were doing Space Force.
This whole show is based on a ridiculous thing that Trump said early on in his presidency.
Right. It's still my favorite thing that he's ever done.
Well, do you remember, this is going back, but do you remember like in the middle of the Iraq war? Well, we're still there, but like towards the middle of George W. Bush's presidency, in one of his State of the Unions, he did like 10 minutes on Mars. Do you remember that?
I don't remember that.
We're going to fucking go to Mars. It's going to be awesome. We're going to meet Martians.
I know. And my beloved Obama defunded NASA. I do love him, but that hurt my heart.
Yeah.
So, actually, though, experts in the field have said Space Force is not a terrible idea because it's so not regulated and because we have so many vested interests, like in terms of space stations and satellites and not just like assessing risks from, like asteroids and things like that, but it's really more about like policing what other countries are doing up there. So it's really not a terrible idea to have a military branch that's dedicated to that.
Yeah.
Specifically because like now so much of like space exploration is going to like private companies like SpaceX and like Amazon space things that they have going on. So, his decision to fund NASA is totally just like a pissing contest, but also it's not a terrible idea. So there is that aspect to it. I'm so loath to give him any credit at all, but
the science fiction nerd in me loves the idea.
Are you kidding me? I want Henry to grow up and to be like a captain in Space Force.
And the academy is underneath the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco.
Right. Yeah. Got to be in San Francisco for some reason.
So the star of the show is Steve Carell.
Silver Fox in it.
Oh my God. He seems to be a kind of middling career military guy who's given this shitty task of creating a new branch of the military.
Right. So in the very, very beginning of the trailer, it seems like he's getting like he's being like kind of talked down to about something he did, like some screw up he had. And then it almost feels like a punishment. Like he's being given this thing. So like, if it fails, it's on you. Like, sorry.
Yeah.
But it also, he says at one point, he's like, it's always been my dream to build something from the ground up. And like, this is an opportunity to do that. And so, and his like foil, who then it seems in the course of the trailer becomes his friend, is John Malkovich, who is the scientist, the lead scientist.
Yes.
So good.
Oh, I love Malkovich.
And then the other cast is fantastic. I think Lisa Kudrow plays his wife.
I believe so.
And then the other like heads of military branches are Patrick Warburton, Jane Lynch, Noah Emmerich, Diedrich Bader. The late, great Fred Willard is in it in a role. I don't know which role he's playing, but I know he's in it.
Rest in paradise, friend.
I know. And Ben Schwartz is in it, and he's playing like the PR guy.
I love him.
Me too.
It looks super funny. It also, it struck me as really beautifully shot.
Very good.
Yeah, like it looks like the product. Like when I first heard the idea and I heard that Greg Daniels was involved, I was expecting almost something. I was expecting it to look like Parks and Rec or The Office. And it looks like film quality cinematography.
Right. I actually thought it was a show for HBO when I first saw the trailer for it, because it looked like it had that sheen to it, you know?
It had that. That's an interesting. Yeah, that's true. HBO does have a sort of house aesthetic.
Mm-hmm. Like, it is very, like film quality series that they do for HBO. So I was surprised this was Netflix, but they have money now, baby. They got Tiger King money.
Fuck yeah, they do. When I first heard about it, I thought, okay, so this is based on kind of a fuck you to Trump. And now it looks like it could be a really interesting idea.
Yeah, it looks like it's the premise is on a joke, but that it turns into something like aspirational and kind of heartwarming and like, I want to see where this goes. And just, I don't know, it's like all the best things about, really about starting something from scratch and like really like dreaming big in terms of like what we're capable of as like a country.
Yeah, and as we suffer through this pandemic, I can't help but like wish that Space Force really was happening, because we can use something hopeful. That's the thing about NASA in like the 60s. Yes, it was a distraction. Yes, it was involved. It was a dick measuring contest, but also it gave us something bigger than us to like look to. And we can fucking, I don't know, we can use that.
Oh, I mean, the administration's aware of that. Even though, like, apropos of nothing, they unveiled the flag for Space Force, like, 2 days ago. Did you see that?
Oh, right. And it looks, Gene Roddenberry. It's like a
Star Trek logo.
Yeah, the Roddenberry estate has a lawsuit on their hands. They've got a fucking case.
Oh, yeah. Which is funny because, like, Gene Roddenberry was such a sort of like hippy dippy dude who's like communal, like all the nations, all the species, all the races of aliens coming together and like working towards a better tomorrow. And that is so not the message of the Trump administration. I think it's so funny.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Star Trek takes place in basically a communist utopia.
Yeah.
So the next trailer we looked at was Da Five Bloods, spelled D-A, Five Bloods. And this is a Netflix movie made by Spike Lee.
Yeah, now this has more of the Netflix aesthetic of like their Netflix films that I expected.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, the cast, I don't really know too many actors in it. I know Chadwick Boseman is in it. And then Delroy Lindo I saw in there.
Yeah. And I believe you have characters played by younger and older actors.
Right, because it seems, so it's weird. It's like, it looks like shots from the movie in the trailer, like interspersed over like a History Channel, like the 70s or like the 60s, like type of documentary show, because it's like civil rights protests, footage of the Vietnam War, Nixon, like Kent State, like all these different things. And then also over, oh God, I don't know who the singer is, but the singer of that, you know, that slapping song.
Yeah, and you see the singer actually singing.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, that's a Ricky Gervais bit, that it's like World War II had the best villains, Vietnam had the best soundtrack.
Yeah. Well, it seems like, at least in the trailer, he's playing with sort of cliche 70s Vietnam visuals and sounds, almost to a point like, you know this, you've heard this story before,
right?
You know the soundtrack that they're gonna play, but like a lot of things, it's like, well, like a lot of things from Spike Lee, it's like, here is something you haven't seen, which is an African-American perspective.
Right. Like, this is a story of Black Americans who fought in the Vietnam War against, you know, you figure against the cultural background of, like, the civil rights movement is happening. There's so many Americans, I mean, of all races, like, protesting this war, and also, like, the added layer of, this is a country that is, like, currently fighting against your right to vote, and they're sending you to a war.
Right.
So, there's that. In one of the scenes, Chadwick Boseman is like, we've been dying for this country ever since we got here.
Uh-huh.
Like, kind of invoking slavery. I think he's the soldier who is, like, the fallen soldier that they're going back to Vietnam to honor, but also there's, like, a buried treasure.
Right, his buried treasure.
Which I'm like, go on.
But I also like the idea of showing Vietnam as it is now.
Mm-hmm.
Because those are images that you don't see a lot. And I got to be honest, I'm not sure what it's like there now.
It's a big tourist spot.
Yeah.
In the same vein as Thailand. You know, it's got a lot of, like, beautiful natural places. It's It's become very popular for tourists, and not just for veterans, because I actually know that it's become popular for veterans of the Vietnam War to go back. I knew a guy who used to swim laps at the JCC who did a big tour. Like, he went back to Vietnam, he went to Laos, he went to Cambodia, and he's, you know, he did it for like pleasure, but also just to kind of go back and, you know, see what, wow, what it's all about, not as a, you know, enemy combatant.
Wow. One of the other things that I found compelling was, at least in the trailer, all of the footage from the 70s is in an aspect ratio that's closer to television or old television. It's more boxy.
Yeah.
In present day is more widescreen. And yeah, I like the cutting in between that.
Yeah, you look like you're, it looks like you're watching almost like newsreel footage.
Right. I'm interested in seeing it. I'm interested. But, you know, to speak to a larger trend that we've been talking about on the show, we're starting to see that this distribution chain straight to HBO Max or straight to Netflix, it's strengthening. Mm-hmm. It's becoming first choice instead of second choice. Mm-hmm. And again, I have to express my fear that theatrical exhibition, as we knew it, is going to go away.
I think it's going to change dramatically. I do.
Yeah.
I think going to the movies is going to be a more rarefied experience, that it's like a real special occasion kind of thing.
Yeah. So the last trailer we looked at is Becky.
Yeah. I have a lot of thoughts.
Really?
I do. I have a lot of questions and concerns, but it's interesting. It's interesting.
The plot is, it's a thriller. Mm-hmm. It looks a little bit like the film Funny Games.
Yeah, I thought of that. Actually, I want you to describe the movie and then say who's the star of the movie.
No problem.
Okay.
So a family that has a teenage daughter who is troubled in some way that's not quite clear in the trailer.
Mm-hmm. Seems violent from the outset.
Yes.
Like, she seems like a violent person.
And
like,
she's Becky.
She's Becky. She's got some problems at school, but like serious problems. Like, it seems like she attacked her classmates or something. Yeah. Violently.
And the family goes away. I don't know for how long they go away. And a man who we find out is a skinhead, mm-hmm, neo-Nazi, comes to the family and basically holds them hostage because he believes that they know how to find a key that he's looking for that, I don't know, opens some sort of treasure.
Treasure!
It looks tense. It looks scary.
Right. He's an escaped inmate. He and three other guys escaped, right, from a federal prison. They all seem to be neo-Nazis. And it's like a home invasion.
Right.
Story of this like kind of remote cabin. Now he's holding the family hostage, and Becky is outside of the house.
And Becky's gonna fuck shit up.
And Becky has the key.
Yes.
And also a walkie-talkie for some reason, because I guess it's the narrative device as to like how she knows what's going on, right, in the house to begin with. And the neo-Nazi.
Wait. Before we get there, I want to say that it looks like Becky's gonna Home Alone.
Yes.
The situation. I was like, this is like Tarantino's Home Alone.
Yes, absolutely. It's like such a weird, oh my, it's like weirdly cutesy.
Yeah, it's like, am I supposed to find this funny?
It's got like a funny little fox hat on, and there's some Wes Anderson looking shots where, yes, she's like tying things up and the camera like zooms in really fast on her. And you're,
yeah,
like, okay,
yeah.
She's like, what is happening here?
So the father of the family is played by comedian Joel McHale. Interesting casting, but wait, it gets more interesting.
It's not the most interesting casting.
Who plays the skinhead?
Well, I think very inspired by his dear friend Adam Sandler's turn in Uncut Gems, he decided he's going to go big for this one, and Kevin James is playing the lead neo-Nazi.
A shocker for sure.
I mean, I find him terrifying, so I think it works.
He is a big, intimidating man.
He's a big dude. Like, he, yeah, is.
And he looks scary in it.
He's not unbelievable in the role. Like, he does look like a, like, he looks like a beefy guy who can really mess you up.
I guess what's interesting is his decision to do it, him accepting that role.
Yeah.
Because he's primarily been a comedian.
Right.
And did lighthearted, silly things like Adam Sandler movies.
Right. Like, what is his biggest franchise? Paul Blart?
Yeah. I've seen none of those.
No, neither have I.
But we'll do a mini one day on them. And, often a comedic actor will want to do a serious role, but you don't often see them being the villain who's also a neo-Nazi.
He really swung for the fences on this one. And you know what? God bless. Like, I want to see how this goes.
I think Becky is going to murder him hardcore.
Yeah. She seems like a psychotic kid.
But in a cute way.
Super cute.
Precocious.
It's weird because she, right in the description on the trailer, it's like spunky, rebellious Becky. I'm like, I would not describe her as such. I would say very scary, emotionally disturbed Becky.
But she's got on one of those Hot Topic animal hats.
Little funny hats. I know. It makes her less scary. She's actually the most terrifying character in the movie. I really get this feeling that, like, they're afraid of her at points.
There's a scene towards the end of the trailer where Becky and Kevin James are confronting one another, and he says, "I don't want to hurt you," and she says, "Well, I want to hurt you real bad."
Yeah, she's like, she looks like she is absolutely loving the violence and the mayhem. Yeah. And it seems very violent. Like, at points, she has blood splattered across her face, and, like, it's Home Alone. Yeah, as you said, it is Home Alone done by Tarantino.
Yeah.
And, like, who is holding Wes Anderson hostage for some reason.
Yeah, he's making Wes Anderson be the cinematographer.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I can't help but, the name is interesting, too, because I can't help but think about Becky's and Karen's and the whole sort of idea that, you know, mediocre white women, when they're young, they're Becky's, and then they become Karens.
They become Karens, right. This is the origin story of Karen.
Yes. This is how Karen got to the point where she wants to talk to the manager.
But, you know, that's another thing. It's like, it's funny because it obviously is a tale about race, because he's a neo-Nazi, he's a white supremacist.
But they're not a black family. Oh, the mother's black.
Well, I don't know that she's the mother. I think that she's either the new wife or the girlfriend.
Oh, okay.
Because when Becky and her father show up to the cabin, Becky's like, "What's she doing here?" And she came with her child.
Okay, right.
And who I'm very worried about. That's a sweet, innocent little baby boy. And the woman says to Joel McHale, like, "Oh, you let her walk all over you." So I don't think she's the mother, but yeah, when Kevin James enters the house in the trailer, he's like saying crazy shit about his dog and like being a purebred, like, "Oh, I'm looking for my dog," and you can't let them mix because you always get the worst of each. And then at that point, the woman is like, "Oh, you can leave," because obviously, like, you're insulting me. Or insulting us for being in, like, this mixed race relationship. And so, yeah, it's weird because Becky is such a, like, a term, like, you know, like a term to sort of, like, joke about white people or white women in particular. And at the same time, she's, like, avenging her family against this, like, white supremacist. So I don't know what to expect.
I don't know either, because it seems, at least from the trailer, that the film doesn't know if it wants to be scary or fun.
Yeah, tonally it was a little all over the place.
You know what it reminds me of? Did you ever see the movie The Desperate Hours?
No.
It's from 1955. It's basically Humphrey Bogart is the villain, and he's like a scary villain in it.
Mm-hmm.
Him and a bunch of other criminals hold this family hostage for like a week. And they're like... this white picket fence, Leave It to Beaver, like, corny, happy family in the beginning of the film. And then Bogart comes in, and it's a very good movie. And it reminded me a little bit of that. It had those vibes a little bit.
Hmm.
What you do have is the two central male characters, two comedians.
Yeah. I don't know what she's done. The girl, Lulu Wilson is her name, who plays Becky.
I don't know. Let's see if Becky has done anything.
She looks good in it. Like, I am afraid of her.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, she's in The Haunting of Hill House?
Oh, she's Young Shirley. Oh,
Young Shirley. Okay.
She's in a lot of horror. She's in Picard.
Oh.
She's in Ready Player One. I guess she's done a lot of stuff. Huh. Is she related to Luke Wilson?
Ah.
IMDb says no.
IMDb, I see here in trivia, Luke Wilson is also known as the hottest Wilson.
All right. Okay. Well, then that's true. Entertaining films, they all seem.
They do. And so very vastly different.
The Five Bloods comes out like next week or something. Out of nowhere. Yeah. It's like the beginning of June.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. I did see a June date on there.
Can you believe it's going to be June already?
No, March was like 3 years, and then April really flew, and May's kind of doing the same thing, I guess, as we got more used to it.
I'm going to disagree entirely.
Okay.
I feel like April and May were decades.
I also think I feel like I'm kind of racing downhill towards my due date.
Right, you're also with child.
I am.
How does that feel, to be stuck inside and then have a human stuck inside you?
I am like a little Russian doll. I'm 7.5 months now, 7 months. It's getting there. And because of my condition, I'm not really allowed to go grocery shopping or do any like errands.
By condition, do you mean someone who likes Zack Snyder movies?
Yeah, that's it. My condition, they won't allow us out of the house. It's like The Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
We have to wear Z's on our chests. But I only leave for doctor's appointments, and because I'm high risk, half of my doctor's appointments are at the hospital, so you kind of do feel like you're walking into the belly of the beast every time.
Yikes.
But I've been reassured that it's calming down, it's getting better, and it's fine. Like, you can go to a hospital without immediately contracting this illness.
All right. Well, all right, let's take a break. And we'll come back for the chill session. This is PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. Did I introduce you in the last segment?
I don't actually think you did.
Well, the voice you've been hearing is Janine Gagliardi.
True fans know.
Real ones know.
Real ones know. And also, if you read the episode description, you can see. And if you don't, it's going to be a fun little mystery for you.
I knew I fucked up something. Janine Gagliardi. No, I must have. Well, I've definitely said your first name a bunch.
I don't know. Oh, Bill. Bill just came in with pretzels and scotch. And he's wearing a Hawaiian shirt, and it's just, oh my God. He's doing Friday Night Right.
Yeah. PCMC is a podcast. You should know that already if you're listening. The
How
fuck
did you
are you
even
doing?
Get here?
Who are you?
He's so confused. What are these voices coming out of my phone?
We're not ghosts. This is the chill sesh. I watched all three seasons of Avatar The Last Airbender.
What'd you think?
I loved it a great deal. People have been talking about it for years, so I wasn't sure what I was getting. But I did know that I was going into it with some people being like, this is the greatest show ever.
You know, it's number one on Netflix right now. I just saw it on Reddit.
You know why? They're smart because they're doing a live-action show.
Oh.
So it's like they're drumming up excitement. Yeah. It's hard to go into anything when people build it up that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you're kind of like, all right. And, you know, the first couple episodes are good. I wasn't like, this is the best show ever. But as the series progresses, I think that it remains a show that's appropriate for children. Mm-hmm. But the narrative and dramatic things it asks of its audience, I think, are not often asked of children.
Yeah, I would say in a vein very similar to the Harry Potter series, in the same way that like the first book is appropriate for 11-year-olds and the last book is appropriate for 18-year-olds, it really kind of grows with its characters, not necessarily with the audience that's watching it. It grows with them.
Right, Right. I do love it. I watched it fairly quickly, but I didn't binge it because I felt like I wanted to savor it. Mm-hmm. My favorite character would have to be Uncle Iroh.
Aw, I love Uncle Iroh.
He's wise and he's funny and he loves tea. Mm-hmm. And he was a military general. He was the Dragon of the West. Mm-hmm. And I love a story. Well, I've talked on the show about how before I got my shit together and got on proper psych meds, I was kind of a shitty person. So I'm always drawn to characters that used to be bad and now are good.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say, if you haven't watched it yet, I'll say spoiler alert, skip ahead 5 minutes or so, because I want to talk about it. My second favorite character is probably Zuko.
Yeah, he's got a great arc.
He begins as the villain, and by the end, he's part of the team.
Mm-hmm.
And unlike Kylo Ren, it's earned and it makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. They do it so gradually and so beautifully. It's like you see he has a scar on his face. So you know something happened, but you don't necessarily know what, right? And he's the bad guy. You know, he's on this mission to find the Avatar, and it's kind of like a fool's errand they send him on, to get rid of him. But he becomes obsessed with this because he's been like ousted from the court of the Fire Nation by his father, who's like a big abusive piece of shit. But you don't know that yet necessarily.
Right. He thinks that he wants his honor back, but what he really wants is for his father to love him.
Right. And Iroh fills that role of like this person who actually does love him and sees him for who he is. So Iroh is kind of on this journey with him to sort of like kind of be a babysitter, it seems like.
Iroh's interesting because he's there with him, but whenever he sees the opportunity to push him towards the light, he doesn't.
Yeah.
It's a great character.
It's a great character. His arc is great because then we start sympathizing with Zuko. You know, even though he's still doing these things that are like screwing with our protagonists, he becomes a more sympathetic character because we get to know about his family life, we get to know about his dad, we get to know about Azula, and like all the crazy shit that's going on in his life. And then by the time he makes a turn, like a face turn, we're on board. You know, like you want him to succeed. You want him to be a hero.
Yeah. Again, I love a character who was bad and chooses to be good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I'm going to try to be a good guy now, but I'm not great at it because I still have a temper because I was abused.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I brought this up a second ago. I can't help but compare it to Kylo Ren.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's similar and it's done so much better.
It's done so well. It really is. I would say the real only drawback to his story, I would say, is Azula. But she's sort of like I like Azula, but she's just, you know, remorseless, has absolutely no redeeming quality. He's such a good, complicated character that her being so uncomplicated is like, I think it falls short for me.
Right. Because most of the villains, you know, we do that thing where we get into the depths of them and you see that they're just, no one's truly evil, but she is kind of evil.
They do, I mean, she does obviously suffer from mental illness. There is that. But I also don't like that when they're just like, she's literally crazy, so she's, you know, evil incarnate. We can't help her.
Yeah.
But her, like, her little sidekicks, one of them, I think, becomes good, or maybe both of them.
They both become good.
They both do, yeah.
Yeah. The Fire Lord is voiced by Mark Hamill.
I didn't know that. Oh, wow. Yeah. My favorite character was Toph.
Yes!
I love Toph.
I am here for Toph.
I love Toph so much.
She's tiny. She sees with her feet.
Mm-hmm.
She's like the most badass character, but she's like a fucking 4'5" little girl. And I found out through all this, you know, there's all this new writing about it because of it being on Netflix,
mm-hmm.
that the creators wanted her to be a male character. But one of the writers fought really hard and said, no, she should be a female character. And I think it's so much better that they want that way.
I agree.
Yeah. It really is, I don't know. I don't want to say it's good for a kid's show because I like children's programming and I think it can be very good. I don't like the idea that something is good in spite of its genre because I don't think that inherently children's programming is bad. I think what makes a good show for kids is a show that doesn't speak down to them and asks them complicated questions.
Yeah.
Like maybe the bully is the bully because his dad hurt him.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can forgive the bully.
Right.
Stuff like that I think is very good.
I also think that the payoff of the series is excellent. Like, I don't think it fell short for the final matchup. Like, I think the Aang, Fire Lord, Ozai matchup is really good.
Yes. And spoiler alert again, if you tuned back in, Aang doesn't want to kill the Fire Lord, which is his destiny. And I really like that in the end, he found a way to defeat him without killing him.
Mm.
Now I want to watch The Legend of Korra.
I've never watched it.
It's much more divisive. Some people really don't like it. Some people like it.
I think it's because, I mean, not quite as egregious as the Atticus Finch stuff, but it's sort of like they do the Atticus Finch thing of giving us a sequel or like giving us an epilogue of like what happened with Aang. And we're like, oh, I don't need to know that he grew old and like had kids and like did whatever for the rest of his life.
Yeah, it's 70 years later.
Mm-hmm.
And Korra is the next Avatar. I really hope that this Netflix series is another generation, another Avatar, because we're not quite sure what it is yet, and some people are speculating that it's a live-action remake, which we've been down that road before. Mm. I don't see the creative potential in doing that. I don't see why the original creators would want to do that.
Right, and now, are they on board?
Yes.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, they are. It's theirs.
Oh, that's good. That's really, right. I like their product. I really do like the series a lot. Did you see the M. Night Shyamalan movie?
Well, it just came out the same time with the series on Netflix.
I don't know, that was wise. We're doing a live action show. Here's this live action movie based on this series. That's a piece of garbage.
It seems like a legal thing. Like, okay, all the IP that's Avatar. Oh, wait, this one in there too? Oh, no.
Yeah, I think, what is it? It's supposed to be just like the first season, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've only watched about a half hour of it.
And you walked out.
Yes, I walked out. And I was on a plane. It's pretty bad. The only thing that's interesting to see if you're a fan of the show is to see a 3D realistic version of like Appa.
Appa, yeah. Flying, Appa's good in it.
The flying bison or Momo, the lemur animal. Mm-hmm. Other than that, every choice that M. Night Shyamalan made that was a departure from the show was the wrong choice.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of making them all people of color, he just let the bad guys be people of color and made the good guys lily white. Which I don't understand.
That was odd. Dev Patel played Zuko?
Yeah.
And Zuko's voiced by Rufio.
Yes, in the show. Yes.
I love him.
Yeah, he's good. I love a lot of the voices in the show. I like that Aang is like a genuine child. It's like got like a real 10-year-old kid.
Yeah. It's kind of like with Adventure Time. Like the first season, Finn sounds like a little boy. And then by the time the series was over, he's like 18 years old.
Oh. The female protagonist, Katara, is voiced by Mae Whitman.
Oh, yeah.
Also known as her?
Her?
From from Arrested Development.
I don't know, Anne.
You've got Anne on your face. I mean, Egg. What have you been chilling with?
Oh, a lot of things, actually. I think the last time we got together for one of these, I hadn't seen much. Like, I don't know, we got into a groove, though, where we're watching like a lot of new things. We watched The Boys on Amazon Prime.
What is that?
It's based on, oh God, who's the author? It's based on a comic book series. I want to say it's Garth Ennis. The guy who did
Superheroes, right?
Yeah. So the guy who did Preacher did this superhero show. I think season 2 is coming out this summer, but it was like pushed back. And it's basically like a Justice League. They have kind of like one-to-one equivalents. There's like an Aquaman, a Superman, a Wonder Woman, a Flash. And they're all like scumbags. They work for this company that's essentially Marvel. Like it's called Vought. It looks like Stark Tower. And they're like a multimedia company. They make films based on these real superheroes. They merchandise the superheroes. They have lines of clothing. It's as if superheroes really existed, like they would merchandise the shit out of them. And they do.
Okay.
But they also manage them. So they're like their talent management. They get them gigs. They get them like saving opportunities. They're like, they're very weird type of company that's both like a media company and also like almost like a political entity, because they're like almost like a lobbying group. They're like lobbying to have superheroes in the military. Like that's uh-huh. They want a contract. And in the meantime, they have all of these like inside like police department contacts and military contacts that will get them hooked up with, like, if something's going wrong in the world, they get the first dibs on it so they can get the superheroes there to, like, save the day first. But in the meantime, the superheroes are kind of operating extrajudicially, and they don't really have to pay for anything that they do. So the series begins with this kid who's played by Jack Quaid. So it's Dennis Quaid and Meg Ryan's son.
Okay.
Yeah. I feel bad. Like he's pretty good, and so just to introduce him like that. But whatever. That's
you should only refer to him as the nephew of Randy.
The nephew of Randy. This is the most important Quaid. You know what? I'm saying a lot of things this episode. The hottest Wilson. Wow. The most important Quaid. The most culturally important Quaid.
The most relevant. The salient Quaid.
The most prescient Quaid. He knew the most. We should have all listened to him.
He did. He knew the aliens were coming.
I'm pilot. He doesn't say I'm a pilot. He says I'm pilot. Anyway, so he's the star of the show. He and Carl Urban are the stars of the show. And he's outside with his girlfriend. And all of a sudden you just see like his girlfriend is not in front of him anymore, and he's got blood all over his face, and he looks over and the Flash character was running down the street and she stepped off a curb and he blasted through her and like exploded her. And essentially like Vought comes to his house and is like, we're so sorry about what happened to your girlfriend. Like how much money will it take to make this go away? And he's like, I don't want your money. Like, I want these people to be accountable. But, like, there's no way to hold them accountable. And so then he gets recruited by Carl Urban to become a member of the Boys, which is, like, this, you know, this underground group that basically is trying to take down the supers. And they each have grievances against them.
Uh-huh.
And it's a very, very gory series that's, like, very ridiculous.
So what's the tone?
It's, you know what, it's the tone, tonally is very similar to Preacher in the sense that it's, like, hardcore violent, but also, like, kind of funny. So I would say that's where it is.
Here's my question. Mm-hmm. If you're someone who might be just superheroed out, you've seen it, you've seen everything about it, you've seen all this revisionist versions of it, you've seen all these different takes on it, you've seen the Watchmen series, you've read Animal Man, how would you express its value to somebody who just doesn't want to do another superhero thing?
Superhero fatigue, I would say, is something maybe you wouldn't want to go right into it or give yourself a break. But it is, you know, there are so many like dark, gritty superhero things that you can't even say it comes in with that point of view, because we've also seen that.
Right.
And like, even the flawed hero narrative, we've seen that as well.
Right.
But this is just like superhero. Like, we hate superheroes. They suck. They're pieces of shit. Like, let's take them down. Let's take them out of commission. So maybe if you are superheroed out, this might be good for you, because like you just want to rampage against them.
Okay. And you watched that entire series?
Yeah. How many episodes was it? Eight or ten episodes? It's pretty short. You know, it's only got one season right now. I know it was. I think they filmed season two, but it's not out yet. So, you know, it's pretty good. I liked it. We watched it and then we just kept talking about it for the rest of the week. So it was interesting enough that, you know, it stayed on our minds.
Interesting.
And then I followed it up with Fleabag. I did not like the first season. I went all the way through the first season, was like, I still don't like it. And then I liked season two.
Okay. Both of those statements are fascinating. I can understand. All right, I don't understand why you don't like season one, but I can respect it. But I don't understand how you go. How do you like season two without season one?
What's his name? Andrew Scott. I think he ramped up the show. I think his involvement really like energized everything. I found the first season to just be very dreary, and I know it's supposed to be like not like haha funny all the time, but I just found it like very depressing and just like, oh god, I don't want to be in this person's life at all. Which I know you're like, she's not supposed to be a likable character, which I get.
Yeah.
But I did not like her world. I did not want to be in it. And then I kind of felt like she was healthier in season two, even though she's still like a screw up, but like it made me feel like, okay, I can actually like be here with her now. And I liked the Hot Priest storyline. I liked the wedding storyline. So I just liked it a lot better. It felt, I think your brother actually pointed out what I thought was the flaw of season one, where he's like, it just feels like way more disjointed than season two. Like season two, there feels like there's a real thrust to it. There's like a story that they're telling. Whereas the stuff with Boo in season one is kind of, I don't know, it's sort of like the background of what's happening with everything, even though that's really kind of what you're trying to piece together.
They're definitely bookends.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about my guy, Brett Gelman?
He is a magnificent scumbag.
I love him so much. He's the best scumbag ever.
He really is. He's a good one.
And he's almost too bumbling to be the villain he tries to be.
He just gets scary in one scene, though.
Yeah, he does. But he's such a loser that he really never achieves villain, I don't think.
He flirts with it.
And his how he ends is, I think, really interesting.
Yeah.
It's, so how do you feel about Phoebe Waller-Bridge?
I don't get all the hype, honestly.
She reminds me of you, though.
In what way?
You know, like a slutty train wreck.
I thought we were going to save that for the mini.
No. She reminds me of you in, I think she slightly resembles you, and I think she's sort of cutting in a way that you're cutting. In all good ways.
That's hilarious, because Bill, while watching the series, is like, I'm trying to figure out if she's attractive or not. And you're like, she just kind of resembles you a little bit. So I was like, Oh, that's really funny. Well, if it's a compliment, then I take it. But I really am not that interested in guinea pigs, I can assure you. Although you did gift me with a one-eyed hamster once.
I did give you a one-eyed hamster, which is not a euphemism.
No, it's not. You gave me a legitimately one-eyed hamster, and when I pointed out that it had one eye, you said, I thought she was winking at me.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
You know what it is? I could see you narrating your own life to yourself.
It's just a desperately lonely individual who keeps disassociating while in public. Although I love that. I love that part of season two. That Andrew Scott is like the only person who like really sees her for like who she is or like what she's doing.
Yeah.
And that point when he's like, what that? And then he like screams in the camera. You're like, oh, it's so jarring.
Yeah. He's like, where'd you go? Where was that?
I love it. He's an alcoholic in that show, right? I mean, every time he gets like, they don't really deal with that, but you know, he mentions his parents are alcoholics and he's clearly one.
He's wonderful. I mean, I loved him as Moriarty.
Me too.
He was great as Moriarty. He is a great actor.
They have fantastic chemistry.
Yeah, they really do. Yeah. You know, is it a fox at the end?
Yeah.
It's CGI.
Yeah, I believe it. It didn't look like it was really there.
She wrote it and then she was like, we'll just train a fox. And they were like, you can't do that. And she was like, oh, I didn't know.
I like when that episode that ends with them like mid-scream because the fox came out. He's so freaked out by foxes.
Yeah.
You know what? I would say it's so short. And if you like me, didn't enjoy the first season, give season two a shot because I think it's worthwhile.
Well, what made you watch season two?
I had heard it was the greatest thing to ever hit television.
Wow.
So based on that, and then it won all those awards, right? So, you know, hearing that and then, you know, people whose opinions I generally agree with or respect, like you guys, You know what you and Anthony did? Either Minnie about it or you talked about it during one of the episodes. Yeah. So I was like, I'll check it out. And I just did not like season one much at all. But yeah, season two, I did like a lot.
Mm-hmm. Anything else?
Well, we both watched Solar Opposites.
Oh, yes. But we had solar opposite opinions on them.
What?
Well, we talked about the trailer before, and we were saying how it looks so much like Rick and Morty. It just seems unimaginative. But I watched it mm-hmm. out of curiosity, and I found myself laughing a lot. I was like, I find this very funny. I don't know if
you got me.
I don't know if the premise is that unique or interesting. I like his voice, his writing voice. Mm-hmm. And I genuinely found it way funnier than I thought it was going to be. And the storyline that you liked the most, or the subplot that you liked the most, mm-hmm. I got tired of.
Oh, really? The wall?
Yeah.
They do the whole episode in the wall, and then that episode is called, like, the two main characters, like, catch a bear.
Right.
It has, like, nothing to do with what's happening in that episode.
Well, if you look at the background of the wall, like, you'll see them outside, and you can see the bear story progressing. Like, they've got a book about bears.
It's like the Rick Lantis adventure or whatever. Yeah. Like, you never see it, but you're following something else.
Yeah.
I didn't dislike it. I don't think it's bad. Like, I'll watch season two. I think it pales in comparison to Rick and Morty, and I also
yes.
I mean, yeah, and that's fine. I don't think it's different enough. Like, the high school, like, it seems like a set that they're reusing, which is weird, you know?
The house looks very similar.
Yeah. I don't really love the main characters, but I had, like, at least one good laugh in every episode, and I love the opening gag.
Yes.
I loved it. So there's a lot to like about the series. I don't dislike it.
What's the opening gag?
When they're all lined up at the mailbox, it's like they do actually a very Avatar type thing they like introduce what's happened to their planet every time. And then they're like, we came to Earth. And it's like, now it's like, see, I'm the one holding the pupa. I just dropped the pupa. And then he says something different every time.
Right.
He's like, people are always saying that they love their children. If they love their children, they try to have as many children as possible. And I don't see that happening. He's like, shit.
I do love the idea of two aliens, and one hates it and doesn't understand it, and the other one loves it and is, like, loving human culture and getting way into all of it. It's an odd couple show.
It is an odd couple show, and it's weird because they're, what are the kids referred to as, like, replicants?
Yeah, I think that they're clones of them.
I think they're clones.
Yeah.
It's like a nuclear family.
Yeah.
Right, so it's like you have them as the parents, and then they have these as the children, even though they're all kind of there on, like, a mission, I guess, to, like, promote the species. I love that the main characters sleep in the same bed.
Yes!
Even though there's, like, no romantic inclination between them, it seems. It just, like, they do, it seems like something they do because they saw other humans do it.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the subplot that you really liked.
Oh, the wall.
Yeah. The children, the replicants, the boy one is voiced by the boy from the Goldbergs, mm-hmm. and he has a ray gun that shrinks people, mm-hmm. and just sort of indiscriminately he shrinks people, and they have a wall in their bedroom that is like almost like a if it were like a city for hamsters. It's right. Like all these little boxes that are connected by tubes, and whenever they shrink somebody, they put them in that wall.
Right.
And then we start to see a subplot of, like, the world inside of that wall.
Right. Because first everyone's, like, very disoriented, and then it seems rather quickly they've developed a civilization in there. There's gangs. It's kind of like Escape from New York style. Yeah. And there's factions.
Exactly. Because there's a duke, and and they're like, one person's explaining it to a newcomer, and she's like, you mean like the Duke from Escape from New York? And he's like, yeah, exactly like that.
Exactly like that, yeah.
I forgot about that movie.
And then it's like cute and also violent, but like cute because they repurpose anything small that they can get their hands on. So like toothpicks are weapons.
Yes.
The only thing that they're fed by the children is candy.
Yes, which is like their currency.
Which their currency, but then there's like a diabetic person in there, yeah. And he's getting like sicker and sicker because all he can eat is sugar.
The Duke of the Wall is Alfred Molina.
Yeah.
Who's incredible. Fantastic.
Incredible casting.
But there is an episode later on in the season that's entirely inside the wall, mm-hmm. And it's like a revolution. I just felt like I knew where it was going every second of it.
Fair enough. I knew, yeah. I felt like
it's something Rick and Morty, I feel like, has done a lot.
Mm. Well, you know, because they're always playing off movie tropes, or they're like, yeah. Doing a twist on an established like movie that already happened, right? Like Escape from New York. And so you kind of do know where it's going, but you're seeing like their little interesting, like that little mouse, the little.
That was heartbreaking.
I love that mouse. Mm. Yeah, but they like flood floors of the wall. So like they all have to like run up and escape. It's interesting. And it turns out, I mean, spoiler alert, that the Duke could have gotten out anytime he wanted.
Yes. Yes.
It's like you can get anything into the wall.
Right.
But then it's an interesting thing of like, we can all escape. No, we're just going to stay in the wall.
Right. It becomes a sort of ham-handed, you know, narrative about power. I do find the children characters funny, but unlikable.
I find them grating.
Yeah. And no offense to the actress who voices the female, but she really feels like a poor man's Kristen Schaal.
Yeah. She's my least favorite voice. I think that's, yeah, I do feel bad. It's like, this is not her fault.
It's not her fault. Because the character's sort of written that way, too. It's like plucky girl, yeah. Or whatever.
That's one of the other things that I was sort of like thrown by a little bit. Like a lot of the cursing felt very gratuitous.
Yeah.
Where I was like, all right, okay. I'm like, it's not like really funny necessarily.
No, right.
It just feels like you're just saying stuff to say stuff.
One of my favorite bits, which was like a meta bit, was they do a commercial break and it's like, this is commercial break. This is Hulu. This is probably confusing to you. If you're one of those people who pays for the special Hulu that doesn't have commercials, this is even more confusing to you. Way to go, money bags.
Way to go, money. Yeah, that's good. I love it.
All right, let's take a break and we'll come back with obsessions. Welcome back to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm joined by Janine Gagliardi.
Virtually
joined. We're going through Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
Zoom, Zoom, make my heart go boom, boom.
Love it.
So this is obsessions. I want to know what your current obsession is.
All right. Real deal current obsession is we got a new car this week. It's nothing to do with pop culture, but.
Okay, I'm for that. What car?
We got a Nissan Pathfinder. It's very big. I actually got disoriented driving to my doctor's appointment because I've driven the same Nissan Versa for 13 years.
Well, that's the interesting thing, which is your old car, you met me the day you bought it.
That's so right.
Our friendship is the exact same age as that car.
13 years strong.
Which I can't believe you had it for that long.
I know. It's like a little go-kart. It was, it served me well. She did good. But yeah,
Well, good for you.
I was proud of her. I was. And we donated our car to Cars for Kids because we're good people. I'll hold for applause.
What are you essential?
You know what? You can go scratch.
I'm a little sad because I feel like you've thrown me away. You've given me away to Cars for Kids.
You're going to be sold for parts.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember the when I met you, it was through a friend, and you were like, I got to come by and show my new car. And I was like, who's this little rich girl with her new car?
Oh man, I loved that, Versa. I really did. I remember you pointed out immediately a flaw with the car.
I did.
What an asshole. You were like, you know, this light back here, it's really far. So if you need to turn it on for any reason, you're kind of shit out of luck. And I was like, well, I have long arms, so don't worry about it.
And you were like, I really hope I never have to see this person ever again.
Why don't you get out of my car?
Well, congratulations on the new car.
Thank you very much. We were holding off. We were going to do it a couple months ago, and then all this started, and then we're sort of like...
I didn't realize cars were being sold at this time.
Well, we did it, and it's completely touchless, which is great, because I hate being touched at the car dealership. But I truly hate, like, the whole experience of buying a car, like, the dance that you have to do.
Yeah.
You know? But so this is sort of, it's low-key a great time to buy a car, because they have to do everything over the phone and online, and then you just go there to pick up the car and do the payment.
Oh, that's awesome.
So that was great. I was very pleased with that. But yeah, we're adding a second kid, so we needed a bigger car. I honestly was surprised that we were able to make it with Henry in that car for so long.
What kind of car is the new car?
A Pathfinder. It's also a Nissan, but it's just the big one.
So you're sticking brand loyalty.
I guess. She served me well, my little Versa, so why not?
Did you have a moment when you gave her up?
I did. I was like, farewell. I did the Kamala Harris, like, the wave, and then I held my heart. Godspeed.
When I donated my first car, the first car I owned, which was just a giant pile of shit. I remember it was like, you son of a bitch. I'm going to miss you.
You did it. Us. Look at us.
Look at us.
Oh, man. I will say, pop culture-wise, my obsession is second season of What We Do in the Shadows.
I am a little behind. The last episode I saw was the one with Mark Hamill. But
I didn't want anything. We watched it last night, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, we watched it last night.
So, what are you loving about it?
I think it's stronger than the first season, and I really enjoyed the first season.
Yeah.
Bill was saying, he's like, I think there was some, like season one, they were really focused on, like, making Nandor the main character, and now season two, it's like, okay, we're just gonna do, like, a lot more Laszlo, whom I love.
And Colin Robinson.
I love Colin Robinson. He's been great.
I love the addition of the doll.
The Nadia doll.
The weird Nadia doll.
Oh, my God. He's like... I didn't really try to kiss Nadia. I just wanted the energy from that awkward encounter. He's like, I did, however, try to kiss the doll.
That one stung.
Yeah, great guest stars.
Yeah.
Haley Joel Osment's been on this season. Mark Hamill's been on this season.
Oh, Mark Hamill was so good. When he goes into the bar and he's like, I would like one human alcohol beer.
That's like anybody the first time they go to a bar.
Yeah, exactly. Human alcohol beer. I like having to say it's human because you're human.
I was like, I put in the toothpick, unrecognizable.
Well, to not to give it away, but there's a whole episode about that focuses on Laszlo, who's my favorite character. Mm-hmm. And it's, he runs away to, in hiding to create a new life for himself. And it's fucking great.
Jackie Daytona.
I'm just a normal guy.
I love when
he's
beating up the motorcycle, guys.
Yeah.
They're like, we're here to do a charity run. Oh my God. He's like, stay out of my town. Love it. I love it so much. He's great. I also really like the Guillermo storyline.
Yeah, I like where that is going. Mm-hmm. You know, I was thinking about the film. Looking back on the film, there are familiars, but they don't do anything interesting with the familiars.
I was worried that that's what Guillermo was going to be, because most of season one is like that, where, like, he just wants to be a vampire, which they do in the movie. But, you know, once they started teasing at the end of season one that, like, he's a Van Helsing, and there's, like, he's right. Destined to be a vampire slayer. And now in this season, he encounters a group of vampire slayers.
Yeah.
But he's, like, the only real deal, which is right. Funny.
I thought the whole sequence where the vampire slayers sneak into that house...
Yes.
...was both scary and beautifully orchestrated action.
Yeah.
It was actually pretty badass.
It was intense.
Yeah.
Like Bill was like, whoa, this just got, like, actually scary. Like, the show, I think, executed that very, very well, where they had a genuinely, like, a horror movie sequence.
Right. And then it turns into, like, a pretty exciting action sequence.
Yeah. I love that even though Guillermo really doesn't want to kill vampires, he seems, like, incapable of not killing vampires.
Right. It's just so natural to him.
This last episode that you haven't seen yet kind of furthers that storyline a little bit more, even though it's not about him necessarily, but it just, it continues that arc. And I don't know how, I think they're going to have to explore it more now because of how that this last episode ended.
Okay. Very exciting.
Yeah.
So it really is.
Nicole returns in the last episode.
Oh, yeah. It's consistently funny, and it's got great rewatchability.
Mm-hmm.
I've watched the first season maybe 3 or 4 times.
Oh, wow.
It's just always, maybe my favorite joke from season 1 is when they're talking about when Laszlo turned a baby into a vampire, which is way against the rules.
You know, it's funny, across the vampire canon, that's always against the rules. Whether it's like Anne Rice or like Twilight, it's always against the rules to do a baby.
Right. And then Nadja's like, we should go visit that baby. And Laszlo's like, I'd rather not.
Oh, God. They have such great married couple banter.
Oh, yeah. I love her. She's great.
I know. She's fantastic.
Nando is probably my least favorite character.
I know. And I don't dislike Nandor. He just, I don't know.
No, yeah.
He's like the most milquetoast out of all of them, which you'd think Colin Robinson would be, but he's not.
Oh, I fucking love Colin Robinson.
He's great. My favorite line from, I think, this season, the joke of this season was when Nadja is like, she like flashes the guy whose, like, mind has been wiped.
Yeah.
She's like, sorry, darling. And Leslie's like, I don't give a fuck. Bill's like, he adds an H to his fucks. Like, nobody has more fun with that word than Matt Barry.
Oh, everything. The way he says pleasure. Pleasure.
My good lady wife.
My lady wife.
I love that.
The thing about owls is they don't give a hoot where they put their scat.
It's like, do you think we'd be able to see the owl? He's like, I think it all depends on the owl's mood.
They get invited to a Super Bowl party, but they think it's a superb owl party.
Which is such a stupid joke, but it works. It really, they make it work. That episode in particular has a very heartwarming moment. Or, like, a scene where Nadja encounters an old woman who she knew when she was a little girl.
Yeah.
And it's like, how did your life go? And, like, it's, like, sweet. And they're, you know, you think, like, oh, she's gonna, like, bond with this woman. And then it immediately turns into something terrible.
Yeah. It's a great series.
It is. They haven't had a weak episode this season. I think they've all been strong.
Well, it's perfect that is your obsession. Because it segues into my obsession.
Mm.
My obsession is a new novel called The Southern Book Club's Guide to Slaying Vampires.
Ooh, okay.
I read it in 3 days.
Wow.
Which, it's been a while since I devoured a book that quickly. It's written by Grady Hendrix, who wrote Horror Store and My Best Friend's Exorcism.
Oh, is it the one with the cool 80s cover?
Yes.
Okay.
And he also did the nonfiction book, Paperbacks from Hell.
Mm.
He is a really amazing writer. And this book takes place in the South in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And he has so many, you know, I can do a whole mini on him, and maybe one day I will. But he is so great at writing friendship.
Mm.
And the vampire in this book is probably one of the scariest vampires I've ever seen in a book.
Wow!
Because he doesn't just—it's weird. He comes into a situation and gets the whole. How do I put it? This book also deals with race and class and gender, and the vampire's goal is he goes to the South. And he feeds off of the black children from the black neighborhood, which drives down their property. And then with the white people in a white neighborhood, they all invest in the property that they build in the black neighborhood. So he makes the white people rich, which is how they grow to trust and love him and defend him, because he's making them all money. And nobody cares that he is feeding off of basically just black children. The vampire is kind of like a child molester. He only feeds off of children, and he'll pick somebody and just basically feed off them for like months, and then sort of basically bleed them dry until they're all used up. And what's really amazing is that the vampire is a gaslighter. Like, he never is like, "Ooh, I'm a spooky vampire." Like, even when he's caught, he's like, whoa, you don't understand. Let me explain. And he can talk his way out of anything. And the book has a real Ira Levin feel. Ira Levin, the author of Stepford Wives and Rosemary's Baby. Because the book club, which is the Southern women, and they just read true crime. They figure out what's going on, but all the men are like, "Oh, stop reading these books. It's giving you ideas. Just stay at home and be housewives. This guy's good. He's helping make us money." And there's just so much gaslighting in it.
Right.
It's really a great book. Even though it's got a kind of funny title, it's not very funny. And I think the thing I really like about Grady Hendrix is he seems to not be a disciple of Stephen King.
Okay.
And I like Stephen King, but I feel like he's so monolithic that most other horror fiction writers take a lot from him stylistically. Mm-hmm. And this author really, he's not like Stephen King in any way.
Mm.
Stephen King's worlds are very brutally ironic, and it's shitty people that are alcoholics. And, you know, whereas Grady Hendrix's world is actually pretty... it gets very dark, but it's the relationships between people that is the sort of light in it.
Huh. What is it about the South and vampires? Like, not just the Southern Gothic, like, literary history, but, like, Anne Rice's vampire novels take place in the South. The True Blood series takes place in the South.
That's an interesting question. Well, I think, going back to Dracula, you have a question of class and money, because he's an aristocrat.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when you translate those ideas into an American context, you can't help but think about slavery and the South.
Right, like plantation owners are like vampiric in the sense that they're using bodies. They're using human bodies and profiting off of that. And like this, I'm interested, did the true crime women refer to the Atlanta monster at all?
I don't think so. I don't remember. This vampire's
like MO sounds like the killer who's known as the Atlanta monster, who the police didn't move on or do anything about for a long time because he was preying on children of color.
Right.
And so they were like, they're the less dead. You know, have you ever heard that term?
No, I have not.
The less dead. It's like you don't matter as much. So, you know, if you're a sex worker, you're less dead than, you know, like a young suburban mom or something, right? Or if you're like a child of color, you're less dead than a white child.
Right. Yeah. That's true of a lot of serial killers. It's very interesting because when you read this book, it could easily be about a serial killer.
Vampires are the original serial killer. Right.
It's not, you know, fantastical. I mean, the vampire is a vampire and there is magic and supernatural stuff related to him. But that's really not, I mean, the book is like almost like a quarter into the book, there's nothing extraordinary happening. Mm-hmm. It's a very grounded world with this vampire in it. And he's really in some ways presented as like a child molester or a serial killer.
Yeah, so like a child predator. Like he's just operating.
Yes, exactly.
You can almost take the vampire out of it.
Right. And I love that the women love true crime, because true crime is a genre that is very I mean, it's popular, but it's very popular with female readers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for whatever reason, the creators of My Favorite Murder have their own theories on why, because it's about being empowered and how often serial killers subjugate women and, you know, things like that.
Well, they have a really... Well, so I actually just finished the audiobook of Stay Sexy and Don't Get Murdered. And it's not great, but there is a part where they talk about, like, why are women interested in true crime, which is kind of fascinating. And they talk about the term violence against women and how violence against women, who's doing the violence? No one. It's just a passive thing. It's something that just happens to women, right? Perpetrated by nobody. Violence is just happening to women all the time. So it's like, it's putting a face to like who is committing the violence against women. It's almost like you can steel yourself against what's going to happen or what's happening in the world by arming yourself with the knowledge of these crimes. Right. And like, so women psychologically are like, okay, not, you know, I'm going to look at this crime and not do what they did, or like to try to prevent like this thing from happening to you, because all you hear about is women being the victims of these crimes. And realistically, you know, there's no way to do that. Like you're not any more at risk because you took the bus at 3 a.m.
Right.
than you are walking out your front door in the middle of the day.
Right. And in a patriarchal society, who do you turn to for help? The police? The police often don't listen to you or care about what it is you're concerned about or afraid of.
They brought up the example of the Ken and Barbie killers, where basically at the end of his rope, the Canadian constable made a curfew for women. And they were like, wouldn't it have made more sense to have a curfew for any guy who fits the description of the person who was the like serial rapist?
Right.
But no, let's get all the women off the streets. God forbid they should have the right to walk around their own town.
Right. Mm. Have you ever read anything by this author, Grady Hendrix?
No, I added the book My Best Friend's Exorcism to like a reading list that I wanted to try because I liked the cover very much.
Me and Anthony both read that. Mm. And we loved it. And Paperbacks from Hell you'd love too. Mm-hmm. Because it's half history but half like an art book. Because it's all these beautiful paperbacks from the 70s and 80s. Mm-hmm. And it's broken up into these chapters of, like, I think it was my obsession, like maybe one of the earliest episodes of PCMC. Mm. And it's like each chapter will start with like a big popular book and then all the ones that are inspired by it.
Oh, okay.
It's really, he's a really interesting author. Mm. Yeah, My Best Friend's Exorcism. I actually have a poster of that, like a big poster of that, the image you're talking about, which is the paperback cover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So much of the like Stranger Things imagery, I think, takes a lot from those paperback images, like from the opening credit font. It's like,
very,
like Stephen King look. And then that original poster is like a VHS cover or like an old paperback cover. I love that. I love that aesthetic.
Yeah. But what I like about this author is he's not so postmodern. He's not someone like Tarantino that everything just folds in on itself and there's nothing genuine to hold on to. Because I don't know, I'm a bit sick of that.
Yeah, it's refreshing then when you find a voice that's like doing something genuinely interesting and not, you know, something rehashed that you've heard a million times.
Yeah, and, you know, good horror. When you forget that when it's good, it's really good. Because so much of it is bad. All right, well, I think we've tackled all the important issues of the day.
I think so too. I think we did it.
This is PCMC. This is a podcast that's available anywhere podcasts are found. I'm joined today by Janine Gagliardi.
Through the internet, through the magic and power of the internet.
Exactly. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
You're always welcome. This is your home as much as it's mine.
So I'm pretty sure I'm in my own home and you are in yours.
Like a vampire, I invited you in and now you can come and go as you please.
Good, I will.
We end every episode by saying go bye bye.
Go bye bye.